This is the Blaze Radio on demand.
When our water heater broke down last month, it was a nightmare. It took 5 hours for the plumber to show up, and he charged us a couple of $100 just to come out. Then it cost another $1,800 to put in the new water heater. By the time it was all said and done, I felt like I'd been taken. But what else could I do?
The smartest thing you can do is get a home warranty from American Residential Warranty. Their home warranties pay to repair or replace all your major appliances when they break. And they will break, and at the worst possible time. Call American Residential Warranty right now for free information on home warranties starting at just pennies a day. Don't wait for your refrigerator to stop running or your ceiling fans to stop turning. Call American Residential Warranty right now. Ask how you can save up to 50% on washer and dryer coverage. Just call 1-800-686-3910. That's 1-800-686-3910. Again, 1-800-686-3910. Call now.
The more the world changes, the more we find comfort in things that never change. Never change. This is Rabbi Daniel Lappin on demand on the Blaze Radio Network.
Welcome, all you happy warriors, to the Rabbi Daniel Lappin Show. Great to be together with you again. Thanks so much for tuning in. And this would be episode number 27. That's right, episode 27, as I welcome each and every one of you. Happy warriors, as I think of you. All of those people who are spiritually grounded in all that is life-affirming. And those of you who are spiritually grounded in life-affirming values are the only people who can be trusted to triumph over all those who promote an infinitely satanic abyss. That's right. And if you want to know what drives me, what fuels me, what propels me to do the Rabbi Daniel Lappin Show, it is to do everything in my power to provide each and every one of you with the information, with the encouragement, with a sense of community, with the knowledge that, no, you are not alone, and that together we're able to weld disparate hearts into an alliance of destiny that can help save civilization at this truly critical juncture. And as we look around us, and previous episodes of this show will already have provided you with a lot of the background to what I'm discussing, we look around us and we see a crumbled economy. Oh, I understand exactly how a corrupt administration and eager government collaborators will do everything possible to camouflage and to conceal the extent of the economic dislocation. And people believe what they're told. And so, yes, inflation figures, well, they are reassuringly low. Oh, and the employment figures, oh, look how good they're getting. The truth of the matter is that pretty much all of you can read the evidence in your own community, in your own neighborhoods, and you don't need to subscribe to any government propaganda machine to truly understand exactly what is going on. The economy is a mess, and take a look around, and the culture has become vulgarized and obscene. People are being educated and rising up through the ranks in work, in schooling, in education, in government, with absolutely no strength of character. It's as if we have decided to fulfill a grotesque death wish and start creating a robotic race of people who can be programmed with data but have no sense of right and wrong and have absolutely no strength of character to withstand the seductive call of wrong. That's what we're doing. Entertainment becoming ever more vacuous and nihilistic. harder and harder to find a contemporary show or movie that you'd want to share with your family. And so the turbulent maelstroms swirl around the foundation of our being. We look at the military and we watch an organization that was once the envy of the world, once earned the respect of our friends and the fear of our enemies, an organization peopled and led by America's very best. And today, we find that those on the front lines feel abandoned not only by political leadership back in Washington, but very often by their own officer corps. We find those on the front lines helplessly shackled by rules of engagement that are so picayune and so incomprehensible and so utterly impenetrable that in order to protect their careers, very often life-threatening actions are taken, or more frequently, actions are not taken, which become perilous in a far more serious and a far more long-term manner. Look, it's not hard to see that more and more Americans are becoming takers, not makers. They're becoming seizers, not givers. More and more Americans are on the receiving end of a government paycheck in one kind or another. More and more Americans are living off the sweat of the brow of fewer and fewer Americans. More and more people on food stamps, boasts the administration. More and more people using Obama phones, more and more people on welfare, and this is all wonderful. Well, I guess if you want more voters for the Democratic Party today, yes, I guess that is wonderful. And so it goes. How's this all happening? Well, I want to give you a word picture that will help wrap yourself around exactly what's going on. I want you to take yourselves back, if you would, to January 1994 and put yourself in Los Angeles on the 17th of January of that year of 1994, when all of a sudden that entire region of Southern California was shaken by a 6.7 on the Richter scale earthquake. And it was a truly frightening day. People came out and saw freeway overpasses collapsed, and they saw water mains spouting geysers into the air, and they saw gas mains leaking gas that had ignited and fires burning. They saw buildings damaged. They saw emergency vehicles struggling to get around. They saw crowds of frightened people. And I now want you to put yourself in the mind, if you would, of an individual who slept through the earthquake. And finally, after a late morning, he drags himself out of bed and pads over to the kitchen in order to put up a pot of coffee, when all of a sudden he notices that a number of plates and dishes that had been resting comfortably on the top shelf of the bureau, as they'd always been, had slid off and fallen onto the floor. He scratches his head in bewilderment as he goes to get a broom to pull together all the broken pieces and get rid of them. And he can't imagine what on earth could have caused those dishes to slide off the shelf and onto the floor. He doesn't have the faintest idea. He examines the shelf. It seems to be fairly secure. And he concludes, well, he doesn't even know how, but maybe the cat somehow or another jumped onto that shelf and carelessly managed, or maybe out of fear, push all the plates on, whatever it is. It's a total and complete mystery to him. Anyway, sits down and has his cup of coffee. I guess I could also have put in that he tried to have a cup of coffee, but there was no electricity. I could have thrown that in as well, but you'll get the point. And then he goes out and he walks up for to take the dog for a walk, and he walks up the block, and to his astonishment, far away down the road, he notices a geyser of water spurting up in the air and something of a lake forming at the intersection. Cars not able to get through, so backed up trying to figure out what to do and turn around and go another way. And he's saying to himself, what a strange morning in Los Angeles. First of all, my plates broke. Secondly, there was a power outage. And now a water geyser down at the bottom of the block. And he goes a little further on his walk and he spots a collapsed freeway overpass. And now he's truly baffled. And he says to himself, this is the strangest day I can ever remember in Los Angeles. When does an overpass collapse? What a terrible accident. I hope no one was hurt. And he keeps walking and he sees a gas mains fire. And he comes home and he starts thinking to himself, this has got to be the weirdest day ever. I mean, who would have thought? What a coincidence that on one day I don't have power, a water mains breaks, a freeway overpass collapses, there's a fire, and my dishes break, all on one day. What a coincidence. I mean, sometimes you have one of these things happening, but for all of them to happen on the same day, and he lacks the knowledge of a certain event that actually lay behind all of these far from isolated occurrences. And it's only afterwards where somebody says to him, what did you think of the earthquake? He says, what earthquake? Oh, they say, 7 o'clock this morning, there was an earthquake. And he says, I slept right through it, and now I finally understand. This is not a strange day in Los Angeles because of a lot of random things happening all on one day. No! Something big happened in Los Angeles today. And that caused my dishes to fall, and it caused the power outage, and it caused the water mains breakage, and it caused the three-way overpass collapse, and it caused the fire from the broken gas main. Now I get it. And my dear friends, that's what we have to wrap ourselves around. Because if we fully understand the earthquake that took place, everything else that follows makes perfect sense. Well, obviously, the dishes fell off the shelf. Lucky that's all that fell. And obviously, there were parts of an antiquated freeway system that collapsed. Lucky there weren't more. And obviously, fires broke when water mains broke out, when water mains shattered, or when gas mains shattered and water mains broke. Obviously. I mean, it was a 6.7 earthquake. Naturally, what do you expect? And we need to make that same connection to understand in exactly the same way that there was a cultural earthquake. And this cultural earthquake has had a lot of consequences. It's weakened our economy. It's weakened our military. It has coarsened the culture. It has produced people of no character, and very little moral compass. And we look ahead to a pretty rough day as all of this has to get cleaned up and put right. You get the idea? That's what we're talking about. And while we're at it, I want to make an appeal. The organization that makes it possible for this podcast, for this show to exist, and that makes it possible to try and start cleaning up the mess that helps to cure the cultural earthquake that took place in the first instance. It's called the American Alliance of Jews and Christians. And sometimes at this time of the year, people feel called upon by their heart to help support something worthy. And if you feel called in that direction, I would love for you to do anything you might feel called upon to do for the American Alliance of Jews and Christians, a not-for-profit corporation. And you can easily make that contribution online at aajc.org, American Alliance of Jews and Christians, aajc.org, and find the donation button on the donation page for on that website. And that way you can play a small role in the work of the American Alliance of Jews and Christians. I, my colleagues, all of us on the team greatly appreciate each year those that help to make our work possible. Quick break, and in a moment, back to take a look at what was the earthquake that caused all of these dislocations in the country we love and the society we occupy. Don't go away.
Ancient solutions to modern problems. This is Rabbi Daniel Lappin, on demand on the Blaze Radio Network.
When our water heater broke down last month, it was a nightmare. It took 5 hours for the plumber to show up, and he charged us a couple of $100 just to come out. Then it cost another $1,800 to put in the new water heater. By the time it was all said and done, I felt like I'd been taken. But what else could I do?
The smartest thing you can do is get a home warranty from American Residential Warranty. Their home warranties pay to repair or replace all your major appliances when they break. And they will break, and at the worst possible time. Call American Residential Warranty right now for free information on home warranties starting at just pennies a day. Don't wait for your refrigerator to stop running or your ceiling fans to stop turning. Call American Residential Warranty right now. Ask how you can save up to 50% on washer and dryer coverage. Just call 1-800-686-3910. That's 1-800-686-3910. Again, 1-800-686-3910. Call now.
Rabbi Daniel Lappin returns with more of how the world really works on the Blaze Radio Network On Demand.
We're back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. We're continuing with the 27th episode of the Rabbi Daniel Lappin Show, where we recognize that we're searching for the cultural earthquake. What is it? What is the one thing that was responsible for what appear to be all of these separate, disconnected calamities? You see, we understand that civilization exists because it is the result of society being restrained by an invisible web of 20 centuries of Judeo-Christian law, morality, custom. And you got to recognize that this still protects and permeates, frankly, the nicer parts of our country. Really, think about it. You know, where would you rather live? Where would you rather run your business? And I'm being honest here. I shouldn't even have to tell you that, but you know, we're in the custom of saying, well, I'm just trying to be honest. You know, when you're going to say something that you know that you know is provocative or going to be seized upon by the forces and bullies of political correctness. So we sort of try and protect ourselves by saying, well, I'm going to be honest with you now. Like, and what were you up till now? You know, so there I did it myself. But, you know, would you rather live in on the outskirts of Nashville, Tennessee, or would you rather live in New York City? You know, assuming that you're an ordinary middle-class sort of person. Again, if you are at the very top of the economic pyramid, New York City is great. If you're at the very bottom of the economic pyramid, well, New York City is also great. But for normal, functional people who work, right? They don't not work because they don't want to, and they don't not work because they don't have to, but people who work, would you rather be in Franklin, Tennessee, outside of Nashville, or would you rather be in New York? Would you rather be in Plano, Texas, or would you rather be in Baltimore, Maryland? Would you rather be in San Antonio, Texas, or would you rather be in Newark or Detroit? And I'm taking extremes, obviously, but I want you to be aware, and I want you to understand that I'm not in any way talking here about race. I'm not talking about money. I'm talking about how many churches there are in the neighborhood that, and what the attendance of those churches are on Sunday morning. It's as simple as that. Would you rather be in the liberal insanity of Seattle, Washington, where it's impossible to keep a restaurant running anymore? Or would you rather be on the outskirts in, east of the Cascade Mountains or north of Everett, if you're in the state of Washington area? Well, what's the difference? And the difference is that in Seattle, churches are large, cavernous, few in number, and utterly empty. Whereas if you go to the nicer parts of the state, the churches are many and packed full every Sunday morning. Every year or two, my children will remember, I used to have a drive on a Sunday morning. I would take them. Invariably, we ended up in an ice cream store. But the drive, my goal was to circumnavigate, to drive past 100 churches. And it was not hard to do. But the point I wanted to make was that at 10:30 on Sunday morning, all the parking lots were filled to overflowing. People were parked on the grass. People were parked on the median. Each of these. And I had an easy drive. A couple of hours, we would drive, go past 100 churches, and every single one of them was full. And I wanted my kids to see and understand and recognize that the America that they are ordinarily exposed to through the culture, through entertainment, through even through the educational system is very different from the America peopled by citizens who are still faithful and who live their lives in utter fealty to the Judeo-Christian tradition, to a biblically based system of morality and law. And so, what was the cultural earthquake in America? Well, you know the answer. If you've been listening to me for any period of time at all, you're tapping your fingers on the table saying, when will he get on with us? Because you know exactly what the answer is. But bear with me for just a moment on behalf of those perhaps who have not yet heard and understood what lies behind this. And for you, the answer is very simply the abandonment of Christianity, the abandonment of Judeo-Christian thinking that took place between 1955 and 1965 in the United States of America. Signs of it were already earlier, 1950, there were already signs of it. And as I've often pointed out, it's almost impossible to put your finger on a precise moment in a timeline where a vast cultural earthquake shakes a society. No, you can't do that. But you can certainly show a period during which these monumental and consequential changes actually did take place. And that would be approximately the period, 1955 to 1965. Now, one of the silly little things that happened as well is that John F. Kennedy became the first president when he was inaugurated in 1961 to not wear a hat. Now, today, it is quaint to find men wearing hats. It's interesting for me because I wear a fedora. And I do that because we Jews have a tradition of keeping our heads covered, just as we keep our chests and legs covered when we're out in company. Yes, I wear short pants when I'm boating in the summer, and I wear bathing trunks when I'm swimming. But if I'm going to a business meeting or I'm going to a concert, or for the most part, you're going to find me wearing long pants. I mean, that's been true ever since I was 9 years old. And, you know, you're going to find me wearing a shirt. Now, yes, if I'm swimming, I usually don't have a shirt on. Now, I say usually because on the occasions when I've been lucky enough to be boating in the Caribbean with my son, I must admit that in order to save myself from the pains of sunburn and the damage that can occur, if we're snorkeling, you're swimming on the surface or within 10 feet of the surface with your face down with a mask, and the sun is beating down on your back. So yes, lest anyone say, I saw you swimming with a shirt on, I admit it. It's absolutely true. I do occasionally swim with a shirt on, but for the most part, shirts off is fine when swimming. Now, if I'm going to a meeting, I wear a shirt, often a jacket as well. In other words, keeping skin covered is very much part of a tradition of civilization. Okay, I mean, even at its extreme, even at its bizarre extreme, and I do not believe that nudism, or as it's sometimes called, naturalism, I don't think nudism produces healthy young animals, as they often say. Naturism, it's natural. Nudism is natural. You really should experience letting the air reach all of your body and be out in the sunlight and the fresh air. There's no reason to have shame about your bodies. And I've heard all the advertisements. I've had people try and persuade me about how nudism is a healthy lifestyle. It turns people into healthy young animals. And I argue that it doesn't. It doesn't make healthy young animals. It makes sick human beings. You may feel that sick is a little bit strong. But any time that you try and make yourself get used to something which is profoundly unhealthy for the body, I think you'd agree there's something wrong with you. You know, if you start training yourself to eat something that is terribly unhealthy for you, and you train yourself to eat it, you'd say, you know what, you need help. Not medical, not doctor help, you need psychiatric help. Or if somebody would consistently bang his head on a wall, and you'd say, why are you doing this? Because I think it trains me to be strong and stoic and resilient. You know, I think you need help. Not medical help, psychiatric help. There's something not good about this. You don't train yourself to get used to things that are unhealthy for your body. You know, you come across somebody taking poison. What are you doing? He says, look, I'm just taking a tiny, tiny, tiny little bit. And when my body's used to it, I'm going to up the dosage. And that way, over the course of the next 2 or 3 years, I'm going to get my body completely accustomed to strychnine. You know, you need help, not medical help. You need psychiatric help. You're doing something that hurts your body. And you're insisting that you're going to do it until you get used to it. Well, I don't see any reason to apply a different standard when people do something that is unhealthy and damaging to the soul. Right? Doesn't make sense. Why would you do that? And and nudism would be very much in that category. Be a lot like that as well. We were created by a good and loving God who placed within us a natural sense of modesty. And so much so that at a critical moment in our development in the Garden of Eden, we ourselves found the need to cover up parts of our body. We found that need. And then later on, God validated it and said, you know, don't want you to have to depend on fragile fig leaves to cover your privates. After all, they don't last very long, and you'll have to constantly be replacing them. And so God made them clothing of leather. And I've covered the meaning of that in some of my audio CD programs you'll see on my website. And you know my website, right? YouNeedARabbi.com. YouNeedARabbi.com. And at any rate, over there is where I talk in greater depth as to why leather over fig leaves and so on and so forth. But bottom line is that Richard Burton, the great 19th century explorer and amateur cultural scientist, wrote a book called The Golden Bough, and he spoke there of coming to places that had no interaction with Western civilization at all. And even there, in primitive places in New Guinea and parts of Africa, where they had never seen people from the West, nonetheless, they covered themselves. They covered certain parts of their body. It's real. And yet, here we are insisting, not me, not you, but there are people insisting that, oh, nudism, you just got to get used to it and you'll feel so natural. Yeah, I guess if you get used to strychnine after a little while, drinking it feels natural too. It's not healthy, and neither is this. However, all of that was only in order for me to properly explain this. And what this is, well, we'll deal with that coming right up.
The Blaze on Demand. This is Rabbi Daniel Lapin. Don't miss Pat and Stu.
You know, like if I'm going to a dating, I generally have been attracted in my life, typically, to white people.
Yeah, how can we be in the same room?
Did
with
you hear that?
I said generally. I
hear the racism.
No, I just said generally speaking. I mean, I've said many attractive.
You admitted that. We're on the air.
Pat and Stu, weekdays at 5 p.m. Eastern on the Blaze Radio Network. Welcome back to Rabbi Daniel Lapin On Demand, only on the Blaze Radio Network.
Okay, all you happy warriors, here we go again. Ongoing with episode 27 of the Rabbi Daniel Lapin Show. And I think of you all as virile men and nubile women, happy warriors, each and every one of you. Because only happy warriors, and by that I mean people who are spiritually rooted in life-affirming values, only people that I think of as happy warriors are truly capable of triumphing over all those around us who, given their choice, whether they know it or not, are actually promoting an infinitely evil and satanic abyss of darkness. So good for you, and to the extent that I'm able to persuade myself that in some perhaps tiny way I am helping you and reinforcing your values and deepening your conviction. To change a heart there and modify a mind here and help somebody think something through, moving towards the right approach somewhere else, to whatever extent that I might be helping in that, well, that is the fuel that propels me each and every week as I work on this program. And so I was telling you about the fact that President Kennedy was the first one to not wear a hat. And I went on from there to explain nudism and how it is that people who insist on doing things that are destructive to the body are mentally impaired. People who insist on doing things that are damaging to the soul are not necessarily mentally impaired, because they could just be ignorant, but they also might be mentally impaired. What I mean by that is that almost everybody has a pretty good idea of what harms the body. People know that. I mean, for goodness sake, people know it. Now, does heroin harm the body? Sure. Does cocaine harm the body? Sure, without question. Do people still take these things? Yep, they do. Alcohol also has the capacity to harm the body. People do. Yeah. Smoking cigarettes harm the body. Yep, people do these things. So in all of those cases, there is some kind of compensating factor that people believe in the short term is worthwhile. They don't think of the long term, but in the short term, the feeling they get from alcohol or cocaine or opiates, whatever psychotropic drug they are indulging in, gives a very palpable short-term benefit. The long-term damage to the body is less visible. And when a society becomes short-term focused, people are going to do more and more of those things that harm you in the short term and feel good, but in the long term, they harm you in the long term but feel good in the short term. And as society deteriorates, more and more people are going to be more vulnerable to that kind of short-term thinking. And so, yes, alcohol is great now. The fact that I have to drive home late and nobody's thinking about that. Drugs feel good now but could cause longer-term damage when I'm middle-aged. No, nobody's thinking of that now. People are more and more short-term focused. Debt. Yes, borrow money, put it on the credit card, exorbitant debt, build up ridiculous amounts of debt. Yeah, feels great. And the downside, the pain, is further down the road. It's postponed. And so the more you tend to inculcate a society made up of citizens who are short-term in their orientation, obviously, the more you're going to see that society decline as it slips and slides down that slope of long-term hopelessness. And so, similarly, when it comes to things that can harm you spiritually, invariably the damage is more long-term. Invariably, it doesn't cause pain or harm right away. And so people believe that they can get away with it. People believe that it can't possibly do any harm. I know right now, as I'm sure many of you do, that even the community of Bible-believing Americans is somewhat plagued. And maybe plagued is too strong a term. Perhaps it isn't, but it's certainly deeply bothered by pornography and its easy internet availability. I know that religious Jewish communities are struggling with this and trying to figure out ways of dealing with it. And I know that many of my Christian pastor friends are dealing with it in many cases personally as well as professionally and communally. But why is it spreading, and why has it become such a big phenomenon? Some people say it's the most profitable corner of the internet. I haven't verified that information, but it's obviously ubiquitous. And why is that? Well, because it feels good short term. The damage, which is indisputable, I mean, it's hard to imagine any thoughtful person not able to come up with understanding the long-term harm and damage. But there it is, you see. We have become short-term thinkers, and the damage can be postponed. It's like credit card debt or like taking drugs. Feels good now. The pain isn't going to be for a long time. Since we are more and more short-term focused, who cares? Doesn't matter. It'll be okay. And on a lighter note, but nonetheless accurate, excessive television watching. How much is excessive television watching? An hour a day is excessive television watching. And I know many people laugh at me when I say this, because 6 hours a day is pretty average and normal for a large number of Americans. So I say an hour a day is excessive. Yeah. And again, it's the same thing. Feels awfully good while you do it, right? It's a drug. It takes your mind takes your mind off things and worries you have, exactly the same as drugs, psychotropic drugs can do, same as alcohol can do, right? What's an alcohol buzz if not making you feel good for now, making you forget things that worry you and concern you? And television, entertainment, exactly the same thing. I've spoken to you before about the fact that the word amuse or amusement, simply in English means something that stops you thinking. It's anti-thinking because the word M-U-S-E means to think, and A is like asymmetric, amoral, means without, against, not, you know, stopping it. And so it's exactly the same sort of thing. So not surprisingly, as a society becomes more and more made up of people who have surrendered to the seductiveness of the present over the future, short-term, current-time thinking, well, you've got more and more people who are vulnerable to that, and you have a decline in the ability of that society to function, right? I mean, each and every one of us tries our hardest to inculcate in our children the idea of think of the long term. Why is it so disturbing to so many native-born Americans when foreigners come over, and I'm not talking about the Muslim immigration now, but I'm talking about Asian immigrants, I'm talking about immigrants from Nigeria, from Ghana, from Zimbabwe, come over here, and they work their little hearts out. And whether they're running a bodega from early in the morning to late at night, and their kids come home from high school and work in the bodega, whether they're driving Uber cars or taxis, but they are working their hearts out. And not surprisingly, if they themselves don't overtake native-born Americans, their offspring do. Their children do. Their children get this massive head start. And there are many native-born Americans who get deeply resentful of the success of immigrants. I'm not speaking about Islamic immigration right now. They resent the success of Asian immigrants, immigrants from Africa, not Somalia so much, but sometimes from there, but more often from the countries I mentioned. And these people do well. They're working hard, and their kids are being given long-term thinking values. Well, obviously, a family that inculcates long-term values is going to rapidly overtake short-term type people. So long-term thinking, short-term thinking is very much a factor in the overall deterioration of a society. And remember, we're still going to be talking about what on earth was that earthquake we were alluding to earlier. Yeah, you can probably get a sense. But even those of you who have heard the first 26 episodes of this show, we haven't yet touched on this idea of short-term thinking versus long-term thinking and the impact of it and how easy it is for you, your children, your friends, your relatives to slide into short-term thinking, right? I was speaking about the fact that nudism is a step in the wrong direction, and again, harm to the soul. We were designed by a God to be more focused on the soul than the body. That's how we were created. And that's why a hedonistic lifestyle focused only on the body is ultimately unsatisfying, because God played this little trick on us. Well, he didn't play a trick on us. He delivered a system to us and implanted it in our bodies that actually encourage us to go his way. What am I speaking about? I'm speaking about the fact that the ability of the body to respond to a physical stimulus declines. Okay, so I'll give you an example. If we were now in a live appearance, as I do, and I do speeches and appearances at about 40 churches a year around the country, and by the way, if you or your organization has an interest in bringing me, I would love to be able to visit your community. There's a special place on my website to make an application or at least make an inquiry about having Susan and me come to your community, your organization, your church. So just go to youneedarabbi.com. Got it? Youneedarabbi.com. And put in some details there. We'll be back and talk about seeing whether it's feasible. Anyways, I say that because I do a personal appearance. Let's imagine this was a personal appearance we're talking. I would ask for a volunteer, and I would blindfold the volunteer, and I'd put the cameras close up so as that on the big screens on the side, everyone in the auditorium can see very clearly what is happening. And I will engage the person in conversation. I will have us sitting in chairs facing one another. I'll ask the person to give me his hand. And I'll hold his hand in mine, and I'm going to say, I'm going to do certain things. I'm going to touch your hand in certain ways. I don't want to hurt you in any way at all. So you tell me if you feel the slightest pain, okay? And so then I take a finger, I rub it on the person, on the back of the person's hand. And I say, you know, everything okay? Yeah, what am I doing? You rubbing your finger on my hand. And then after a few other innocuous little gestures, I pick up something, and I, at this point, very much hope that the audience does not audibly gasp. But sometimes they damage the experiment by saying, but most times I'm able to mask it. I know it sometimes happens, and so I'm usually talking to my volunteer at that point, so he's focusing on what I'm saying to him rather than any noise from the audience, because I don't want him to be aware that after the innocuous things like rubbing the back of his hand and so on and so forth, that I'm about to do something entirely different. What am I picking up? Tell you that as soon as we come back, and as soon as I've had a chance to once again ask you that if you should feel led in the way to support my work at the American Alliance of Jews and Christians, a donation there would be incredibly welcome and very, very well used for the purpose of making Judeo-Christian values more prevalent, more accepted, and more influential in the economic and political affairs of our country. If you go to my website at youneedarabbi.com, you'll easily find the American Alliance of Jews and Christians page. And by the way, you can also get there at aajc.org. AAJC, American Alliance of Jews and Christians. And if you believe and share my conviction that the future of civilization depends upon what I call an alliance of destiny, a connection between Jews and Christians that alone can stand up to the very damaging and destructive alliance of liberalism and Islam that at the moment is literally sawing away the pilings on which civilization has rested for 2,000 years. If you feel in any way able to help us and play a role in making our work easier, go to aajc.org and find the donation page. You can do that with a click of your mouse or through PayPal or whatever you want. At any rate, anything you do would obviously be enormously appreciated. Back in a moment for me to tell you what it is that I pick up.
There's still more to come from Rabbi Daniel Lapin on demand on the Blaze Radio Network.
Jay Severin.
It's going to cost heroes being buried in Arlington National Cemetery. The only thing left that we can give them? Yeah, because of Obama. Under Hillary Clinton, who cannot be elected. There is no more America if Clinton wins. Because under her, it will be worse.
Jay Severin. Weekdays, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the Blaze Radio Network.
Revealing how the world really works. This is Rabbi Daniel Lapin, on demand on the Blaze Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Yes. Remember that, as Winston Churchill said, virtuous motives, trammeled by inertia and timidity, are no match for armed and resolute wickedness. Think about that for a moment. If I were to rephrase it, virtuous intentions, as we all have, shackled by inertia and timidity, can never beat resolute and determined wickedness. And that's what our society, I think, is confronting. Sometimes we're a little fearful of identifying the enemy. I remember during the 1980s what fury President Ronald Reagan brought down upon his head when he spoke about the evil empire. But it was soon after that that the Soviet Union collapsed of its own evil weight. When you're unwilling to identify an enemy, you stand zero chance of defeating it, which is why it's so incredibly disturbing that this alliance between liberalism and Islam exists, why it is that a president of the United States is unwilling to use the word Islam when speaking about terror, when a former Secretary of State is totally unwilling, and a current Secretary of State, by the way, both Hillary Clinton and John Kerry, utterly terrified of the I word. They do everything they can to race for the exit whenever a reporter brings up the I word in conjunction with terrorism. And so Winston Churchill had it exactly right. What I do and what I'm focused on, what the organization I have the privilege of working for, the American Alliance of Jews and Christians, AAJC.org, what we do is do everything possible to identify the enemy and to help banish inertia and timidity so as that we are able to confront and ultimately defeat the wickedness that is determined to undermine our civilization. So what is it that I do on stage? I pick up a pin, and I usually take a safety pin, because somehow when you unfold a safety pin, it sort of looks much more sinister than just a little ordinary pin. And I take this sinister safety pin, and I prick the back of the hand that I am holding. And usually the person says, "Ow." And I say, "What do you feel?" And he says, "You pricked me." Now, what the cameras show the audience perfectly clearly is that I did not raise the pin from his skin. It's still pricking him. But I say, "Okay, sorry, it didn't hurt you, did you? Did it?" And he says, "No, it was just a prick." And I say, "Are you fine now?" And invariably, he says, "Yes." And once again, the audience is astounded because they can see perfectly clearly that the pin is still pushing against his skin. The camera still shows a depression. The pin is pushing down his skin, so it's obviously still pricking him, but he's not feeling it anymore. And what I then do is I increase the pressure on the pin. And he says, "Ow." And I say, "Yes." And he says, "You pricked me again." And I say, "Okay, are you okay?" He says, "Yeah, I'm okay now." And he doesn't realize that I've maintained the pressure. On more than one occasion, I've actually been able to take a fold of the person's skin and get the pin all the way through. Yeah, I know, it's horrible, isn't it? Because when I said the person can take off the blindfold, in one of the cases, the person went white and nearly fainted as he looked at his hand. The other person laughed. But I made a point. The point is the one I'm making now, which is that God built into our very systems a mechanism that reduces the response we feel to any given stimulus. Now, some of you have already made the link to drugs. You all know that the very first time a person takes a psychotropic drug, the impact is pretty strong. But after months and months of usage, he's had to up the dosage and up the dosage and up the dosage, which is to the enormous benefit of drug dealers and drug cartels and the drug industry in general, right? Works very well because the amount that the person takes has to keep going up. This is true for eating as well, right? Eating is fun. But if you constantly eat to the point of satiation, where you, what happens is you keep having to up the dosage and you keep eating more, you keep seeking more and more exotic experiences to the point that the taste of a fresh slice of bread and a glass of water, you've totally lost the taste for that. You'll never again be able to feel how wonderful that can taste. And so within the Hebrew calendar, and many people of non-Jewish background do something similar to this, because everyone understands that because of the way God created us, and although I lightheartedly said God played a trick on us, that's not a trick. This is really a helpful thing. What God is saying is that if you decide to get full satisfaction in life merely from the physical, if the body is going to be the sole source of satisfaction in your life, if hedonistic living is all you live for, and it's going to be satiating one appetite after another, you become visibly dissolute and physically unhealthy. It's not hard to identify a drug addict. It's not hard to identify the Falstaff among us, the person who has just ate and drank just a little too well, not to mention those who've eaten and drunk just a lot too well. You can see the effect isn't good. The person who has been sexually promiscuous, again, after a period of time, you can see it. Now, here is another way in which there is a difference between men and women, and this is, when I speak about this in public, this is profoundly unpopular and causes great discomfort, but in this sense, if you like, nature is unfair to women. What do I mean by that? What I mean by that is a promiscuous lifestyle reflects itself far more quickly on a woman's face than on a man's face. Oh, it comes through on a man's face eventually, but on a woman's face, it comes through very quickly. In other words, that innocent aspect of beauty, that look of... well, there's no better word for it than innocence, but they're probably synonyms that describe that. That can be violated and obliterated far more quickly through promiscuous behavior in a woman than in a man. It's just one of those things. But the bottom line is that the long-term effects of living for the body instead of for the soul are very real. They are unhealthy. They are bad. Now, admittedly, they're long-term, whereas the pleasure of the short-term is very strong. Do you see where we're going here? And I'm hoping that this is making sense, and that I'm not jumping from cliff to ledge to peak to cliff too quickly here, but that we are together able to ascend the mountain of this spiritual structure. And so what we have is a God who says, look, I give you a body and a soul, and there are ways in order to enjoy the body in a way that will not destroy you, that will not make you look dissolute and damage your body. There are ways to enjoy every sense I gave you, and to do that in an atmosphere of holiness, and everything will be okay. But there's also a way where you can simply abandon the spiritual, proceed in an unrestrained fashion for physical, sensual, and bodily satiation. And the end result is not good, because everybody knows that the amount of stimulus has to be constantly exceeded. You've constantly got to increase it in order to be able to get what you're trying to attain. To get that same rush, to get that same thrill, you have to keep upping the dosage, whether it's food or psychotropic drugs or alcohol or cigarettes, whatever it is. You have to keep upping the, unless you have structures in your lifestyle that reset the sensual odometer. And that is exactly what we have. So, for instance, in the Hebrew calendar, we Jews have 6 days a year of a fast. No eating, no drinking. Right now, you know what? 24 hours of no food and drink aren't going to hurt anybody as long as you're in reasonably normal health. Although, you know, or maybe if you're a nursing mother, there could be an issue of not drinking. You have to speak to your doctor about that. But choose a doctor who has some spiritual awareness as well, who understands the spiritual advantages of fasting. But so on average, you think about it, 6 times a year on average means like approximately every 2 months. It may not work out exactly like that, but every now and then you've got an opportunity to reset the sensual odometer. How beautiful is that? In other words, just how wonderful a slice of bread and a glass of water can taste is something you can get reminded of. If every single day you eat a gourmet meal of exotic foods, and it's day after day after day after day, when 2 months have gone by, and 3 months and 4 months and 5 and 6 months have gone by, you'll never, ever be able to enjoy the taste of an apple. You're too far gone. The only way you can enjoy an apple is if it's baked into a some kind of very special apple pie served with rich vanilla ice cream, or if it's apple cooked in brandy. But the taste of a fresh apple just off the tree, forget it. You're too far gone. It's over. There's no possibility whatsoever of you being able to enjoy that. But if you build in an occasional fast day, all right, you get the idea. When it comes to sexuality, sex, keeping sex as part of a holy covenant of marriage, what a difference. What a difference. And again, within a biblical structure, and again, many people who are not Jewish still practice this, makes a lot of sense if you think about it, which is to pick a period of time once a month where the husband and wife relate not physically, but only verbally, not through touch and the power of touch, but only through verbal communication, not sexually, not physically. And you take, why? Because it resets the sensual odometer in a very wonderful and in compelling way. And so sure enough, during the time that the wife is going through her period, the no physical contact, this is not a primitive taboo or some kind of ancient curse or any of the stupid, ignorant things that I've heard said about it. No, not at all. It allows a husband and wife once a month to experience all the thrill and passion of a honeymoon. Do you follow what we're dealing with here? I hope so. We'll take it a little bit further as we move on in search of the cultural earthquake that shattered so much that held this country together. Back with you in just a moment. I'm Rabbi Daniel Lappin.
This is Rabbi Daniel Lappin on demand on the Blaze Radio Network. Coming up today on Pat and Stu.
The global warming summit producing 300,000 tons of CO2 because 50,000 people traveled mostly via private jet to Paris from across the world for the two-week conference. The climate change summit in Paris is self-pumping up 300,000 tons of carbon dioxide.
Pat and Stu, weekdays at 5 p.m. Eastern on the Blaze Radio Network.
We now return with Rabbi Daniel Lappin on demand on the Blaze Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. Thank you. Really appreciate you being back with us as we continue onwards with this episode, the 27th episode of the Rabbi Daniel Lappin Show, where we don't so much launch thunderbolts of dazzling audacity at you. Instead, I try to provide a sequence of insights from ancient Jewish wisdom that can be applied in ways that enhance the important parts of your life, your family life, your life with your friends, your life with faith, your life with finance. All of these principles we discuss impact all of these areas. And so I was talking about how it is that if I take a fold of your skin in the back of your hand and I prick with a pin and I keep the pin there, after a little while you stop feeling the sensation and I have to push a little harder and you think I pricked you again. After a little while it goes away and it feels to you as if I've taken the pin away. You're blindfolded, you're not watching. I push a little harder and you say, ouch, you pricked me again. But I didn't really prick you again. I'm just pushing the pin deeper and deeper into your skin. And that's just a vivid, an arguable demonstration of this particular point, that the that when it comes to aspects of the body, you've got to increase the dosage regardless of what you're talking about, regardless of whether you're talking about food or drugs or any physical sensation whatsoever. And so a biblical lifestyle that resets the spiritual odometer is the surest way of enjoying every physical pleasure that God built into the universe for the longest possible time. And so paradoxically, when you pursue nothing but hedonistic physical pleasure, you're doomed. You ultimately self-destruct physically by the very pursuit of that which you desire. But when it is structured within a matrix of morality, when food is eaten with a blessing, when a grace before the meal and after the meal is said, so as that the spiritual connection is always there, so as that we each and every bite, we are reminded of God's goodness. What that does, obviously, is enable us to extract from every bite far more pleasure than Falstaff is able to extract from an entire gourmet 12-course feast. I'm serious. I mean, that is, it's a very, very powerful idea. And so the idea is to make sure that we live our lives in a balance of spiritual and physical. If you focus only on the spiritual, well, the traps there are obvious. If you focus only on the physical, well, you got a problem. That's what we've been talking about. And it is the balance of the two that makes life so satisfying and so challenging. And so, you know, when I commented on Kennedy being the first to not wear a hat and what was going on, well, nudism is taking that to an extreme, of course. And nudism is taking it to an extreme, of course, as I say. But the idea is that the more emphasis there is on the skin, the less on the spiritual. In other words, because the skin is the most visible organ of the body. If you think about it, yes, there are obviously very important organs in there, but what you see, the visible part of the body, is the skin. And so the more skin that is showing, the more you are saying, the more the message is, hey, this is all about the physical. And it's not only a message you're beaming out to other people, it's also a message that you're beaming to yourself. And that's far more important. You know, we know the general rule is you mustn't lie to other people, right? But the rule is, the biblical rule is you mustn't lie to yourself. That's just as important. Because lying to yourself can be every bit as harmful as lying to other people. And when you lie to other people, you're not only damaging them, you're damaging yourself too. And so it is that when you exhibit vast quantities of flesh, well, let's hope none of us are carrying that much skin around, but, you know, full display of skin. No, this is completely, in every way, contrary to the instruction manual of our Creator. Because what you're saying is, hey, this is all about the skin. This is all about the physical. And so it's not just what, you know, you're beaming to other people, but by talking yourself into something as unnatural as nudism. And again, this is not a diatribe against. I mean, I realize that very few of you are straining at the leash, waiting for me to finish this episode, so as you can immediately rush off and take off your clothes and frolic outside in sub-zero temperature, exhibiting your skin to all. Now, I realize that very few of you are overwhelmed by this irresistible urge to take off your clothes, but since you know it does exist, there are nudist beaches at almost every single coastal resort. It is a real thing. It's not wildly popular. It's not taking over the culture, but it is there. And again, the idea, and it's to an extreme, right? And so in exactly the same way, nobody needs me to say that a woman who wants to succeed in a business other than pornography or stripping, who shows a lot of skin, is not going to be taken that seriously. Now, by the way, a guy who comes to work with I forget what that article of clothing is, but it's a sort of an abbreviated T-shirt, and you come to a business again in the high tech business. It's for many, many years extremely casual clothing was the order of the day. Guess what? As those businesses mature, as they survive the heady early days and become more mature and established businesses, very often that goes away, you know. It does not last. So I've been in many high-tech companies now in the last year or two, probably 20, where normal formal clothing has become the order of the day. Certainly among the business people, perhaps a little less so among the programmers. But the idea, of course, is that you show a lot of skin. There's a message there, and it's not just a message to other people. It's also a message that your own soul reads loud and clear. And so that's one of the advantages of formal clothing. It's one of the reasons that women in business always have a dressing dilemma, because with men, it's very simple. You put on a shirt and you put on a suit and you put on a tie and gosh, you're covered. From neck to ankles down to the wrists, you're covered. I mean, all that shows is your face and a bit of your neck and your hands. That's it, which is a very, very good way to go. When you're dealing with a supremely spiritual enterprise like business and creating wealth, putting aside the body is a wonderful way to go, because once again, people who are focused excessively on the body typically do not do well business-wise. I mean, again, you only have to look at parts of the culture to see there are people who are totally focused on sensual pleasure, and they are not making any money at all. Many of them are on welfare, frankly. So it's easy to see that a focus on the body and wealth creation do not go hand in hand. They are incompatible with one another. So for men, it's really simple. For women in business, it's a lot harder, because they're very open to the charge, and it's a snicker. It's a malicious charge. Oh, you know, look, she's trying to be a man. So if the woman dresses in a way that's seen as too masculine or too severe, people will have nasty comments. I'm not even going to say it. And on the other hand, women's clothing typically shows more skin. Why? Well, for obvious reasons, because more people find women's skin appealing than men's skin. I mean, it's very simple. And so clothing manufacturers, fashion, and many women themselves recognize that that clothing that reveals a great deal of skin says, hey, look, I am a physical person. And that's an incredibly appealing and seductive message for any male to get. So smart women in business know all along, hey, you know, you can't dress like that, but on the other hand, dress. Anyway, it's a dilemma. It's tough. It is, without question, harder for women to deal with. President Kennedy inaugurates without a hat in 1961. And again, for those people who have the wisdom, and again, in ancient Jewish wisdom, there is a saying, who is wise? He who is able to see that which will hatch from the egg. Follow what I'm saying? In other words, nobody says who is wise, he who can see the future. Because that's not wise. I mean, what are you, a prophet? You can see the future? That's prophecy. No, when we say who is wise, it's who can see that which will hatch from the egg. That's wise. To be able to look at a president inaugurating without the hat in 1961 and able to say, aha, okay, from now onwards we're on a slope towards less clothing. And this is going to result in more and more abbreviated fashion for men and for women. That was wise. The people, and there were people who were able to look at it in 1961 and say, you know what? Every president has been when he's official, he wears a hat. It's seen. It's a part of being fully dressed, right? You keep your head covered, just as you keep your chest covered, and as you keep your genitals covered, and your buttocks and your knees. It's what we do. It's part of being civilized. I mean, even nudists, I'm told, have a whole towel protocol at certain times and places. At that extreme, there is some basic primal awareness that we're not just animals. We don't just walk around au naturel. And so for human beings, all the way, okay. And again, if you're interested in some of the biblical background of this, and I do that on my website. I go much more into the biblical, youneedarabbi.com. On this show, I may allude to the biblical sources. I won't spend a lot of time on them. But in general, in the book of Leviticus, if you take a look at clothing detailed for the priests. Yeah, and that's not just chapter after chapter of mind-numbing minutiae of things that, frankly, nobody could care about. And I mean, who needs to know that stuff? Well, if instead of seeing it as a historic narrative of what people did 2,000 years ago, if instead you saw it as a psychological and anthropological cultural textbook, it's much more helpful. And then you'll see there that among the articles of clothing described was pants and a jacket. Hello, that's what being well-dressed for men means today. And guess what? Some sort of headgear as well. Again, now, you know, I'm not saying that somehow or another you're living wrong or you're not fulfilling a biblical mandate if you don't wear a head covering. God forbid, I'm not in any way suggesting that. Everybody should dress according to what they're comfortable with. All I'm doing is describing the overall spiritual structure of clothing and how it pertains to us. And explaining that, again, you know, why I will wear something, either a skull cap called a yarmulke, which in Hebrew means fear of God, or a fedora, which I wear very often traveling or more formal occasions. Sometimes I wear a baseball cap, but I keep my head covered as part of this process of keeping skin concealed in order to help myself focus as much on the spiritual. Nobody needs any help focusing on the body and the physical, right? We kind of pretty much all know how to do that naturally. And when it comes to the spiritual, we need all the help we can get. Back in a moment as we home in on the answer to the underlying question of this episode and we wrap things up. Hold on. Be right back with you.
More to come from Rabbi Daniel Lapin, revealing how the world really works. On demand on the Blaze Radio Network.
Jay Severin.
The BBC guest said, quote, "Let me give you an example. So far in America, there have been 300 mass shootings so far just this year." It's January 7th.
Jay Severin. Weekdays 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the Blaze Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Blaze Radio Network On Demand with Rabbi Daniel Lapin.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Rabbi Daniel Lapin Show. As we begin to wind down episode 27 and focus on the enduring things in life, ancient Jewish wisdom and its application to our lives, and moving ourselves, even if just for the short space of this show, an opportunity to escape from all the political noise out there. And the one thing to remember about politicians, giants in their promises, pygmies in their performance. That's right. And we're so used to it that we don't expect anything different. That's the tragedy. That we don't hold politicians to the same level that we hold business professionals. Just let a businessman not live up to his promise. Let a businessman fall short of his commitment. And everybody will remind him of it. Everyone will remember it. They'll never forget it. His banker, his customers, his employees, his vendors. Oh, yeah. The business professional is held to his promises. If anything, our advice to the business professional is always deliver more than you promise. When did you meet a politician who did that? Come on. Do you know what one of the most galling expressions is when a politician who's been caught with her finger in the cookie jar, a politician who's been caught lying about something, a politician who's just been caught red-handed, their favorite expression is, "I take full responsibility." By doing what? Resigning? Offering to pay the country back? No. It means nothing. They've learned this little expression. "I take full responsibility for..." By doing what? By just saying, "I take full responsibility for that." Let a business professional put out a shoddy product and people get hurt by it. "I take full responsibility for that." You know what that means? It means money. It means you got to pay. It means everybody comes and files lawsuits. Politicians, just think about it. Think about what they are. It's so disappointing and so depressing. So just remember that you heard it here first. You want to know what a politician is? Giants in their giants in their promises, pygmies in their performance. That's exactly what it is. And we have to remember that. So don't put your trust there. Where to put your trust? Well, you know the answer to that as well as I do. Because we've all been able to watch what has happened to a once great nation as that faith and that trust was taken from its proper place and transferred elsewhere. In other words, a country that used to trust in God, the big G of God, now puts its faith and trust in the little G of government. God help us. And when does this all happen? As I said at the beginning of the show, it's been happening constantly. But from when? It's easiest to start spotting it somewhere around about 55 to 65, that period of time centered around 1960. And just one of the little signs, yes, a president not wearing a hat. Another little sign, the moving onto the market of something called the birth control pill. And again, in and of itself, right, would appear to be harmless. Short term seems to be harmless, seems to be a good thing, a blessing for women in so many situations, surely. If there was anything that was going to absolutely end abortion as we know it, right, surely going to be the birth control pill, right? Only a good thing. Didn't quite work out that way. Long term, well, turned a generation of men into adolescents. Remember, up till the birth control pill, a man got a girl pregnant, typically married her. That was very common. Afterwards, hey, honey, did you not remember to take your birth control pill? Off we go to the abortion. And again, in and of itself, a small thing. But how many people were wise enough in the period of the 1960s to look at what was happening and saying, time to sell short on this culture? Unless something happens, unless something turns it around, these are all little eggs that have been laid. And whatever monster is going to hatch from them is not going to be good. What hatches? Well, this was essentially the cultural earthquake. The abandonment of faith in God. And I know, look, I don't want to sound like a preacher because this is not a church recording or a synagogue. It's not a sermon. I really want to insist on this, that you know that I am speaking here about politics, I'm speaking about sociology, I'm speaking about economics, I'm speaking about military history, I'm speaking about the tangible, real life characteristics of a society. But it's impossible to pretend that God, the faith, and Bible have nothing to do with Western civilization. That would be a laughably stupid assertion. No, on the contrary, they have everything to do with it. It's very, very clear. And so as the abandonment of God and biblical faith began to take place in the 50s and in the 60s, we irrevocably found ourselves on this slide down a slippery slope, and it's just accelerated since then. You know, it's sped up, and what is the deterioration? Well, just like the guy who didn't realize there was an earthquake, and very few people had the wisdom to see the eggs and what would hatch. Most people in the 60s said, hey, best of times, Korean War's behind us, Vietnam War, yeah, not really yet, the full calamity of that not yet evident. But remember, as I pointed out, that as General Patton said, right, America's never lost a war, never will. Well, that's what he said in 1944. But by 1953, America had sort of had a really bad war experience for the very first time ever in Korea, and then it wasn't going to be much more than a decade when we'd have an even worse calamity in Vietnam. So again, how do you explain a country that just never lost a war becoming a country that doesn't seem to be able to win one? Same thing. But a wise person seeing 1960 would have said, okay, stand by for the hippie explosion, stand by for Woodstock, stand by for the celebration of youth over experience, age, and knowledge, stand by for unrestrained, sybaritic and hedonistic lifestyles, and above all, stand by for short-term winning over long-term thinking, people living for the short term. And that, my friends, is one of the most devastating results of the abolition of faith in the culture. It's a sad and tragic thing. And on another show, I'll give you some of the figures that people like the great black economists, Walter Williams and Dr. Sowell, speak about, which is that by almost every measurable characteristic of well-being, for the most part, African Americans in the United States of America were doing better before the civil rights era than after it. Is civil rights bad? Of course not. Of course not. The problem isn't civil rights. The problem is that civil rights came as part of an overall movement of short-term thinking and the destruction of faith resulting in the destruction of family. And so, yeah, civil rights was vital, overdue, had to happen. But unfortunately, it was accompanied by a cultural earthquake that said, forget church, forget family, forget hard work. It's all about the feeling. It's all about the now. It's all about the present. It's all about the short term. It's all about the pleasure, and it's all about the fun. It's all about immediate self-gratification. And these are almost inevitable results of the abandonment of faith. Because if there is one thing that biblical faith focuses on, if there's one thing that being part of a biblically based, seriously committed community, whether Jewish or Christian, it is the idea that you don't live for today. The idea that you answer to a higher authority. The idea that you run your life on your head, not your heart. You go on obligations, not rights. Every single one of these principal pillars of our infrastructure was pulverized into dust during that period of the 50s and 60s. And the result? Look around. And just as our thought experiment earlier on in the show steps out of his house and sees a fire on a broken gas main and a water geyser from a broken water main, and he sees a power outage and a broken freeway overpass, and he says, oh my goodness, what an amazing series of horrible coincidences all to happen on one day. In the same way, we can take a look and we see an economy in bad shape. And we see an educational system perpetrating the cruelest and most evil hoax on young people. We see an educational system that has long forgotten how to teach values, character, and is trying to pump data. And the end result is it's not doing anything. It's failing to graduate young people with even the basic skills of functioning in a society. Failing utterly. Yeah, an educational system that is a disaster. Government that is out of control. A regulatory bureaucracy that controls every tiny detail of people's lives, including how big the water tank should be on your toilet, what sort of light bulbs you should put in your ceiling fixture, what sort of shower you should take. I mean, my goodness, and it goes way beyond that. All of these things, weakened military, the growing contempt of the rest of the world, a balance of trade that each year leaves us worse off, burgeoning national debt. I mean, you know all these things as well as I do. There's no need for me to list this entire lamentable catalogue of calamity. No, you know what it is as well as I do. But, you know, if we're able to identify the cause in each case, if we're able to see that these are not all coincidences, it doesn't just happen, that somehow or another, in the early years of the 21st century, funny things started happening coincidentally in America. This went down and that, and this happened. No, it's all linked. There was one cultural earthquake that took place. And now, I hope you know what it is. Because when we can identify the enemy, yes, we can defeat it. It's as simple as that. My friends, that brings us close to the end of today's show. And I take the liberty, if I'm not becoming obnoxious about this, of again asking you to think about whether you would like to support the work of the organization that I am privileged to work for. It's called the American Alliance of Jews and Christians, AAJC.org. And you'll find the relevant page on the website, AAJC.org. And should you find it in your heart to help support our work, and you know exactly what it is. I've been talking about it for 6 months here on The Blaze. You know just what it is. If you feel in any way inclined to support that work, you know that I would be deeply grateful, and I will express my appreciation. Go to our website and go to aajc.org, and you'll find the donate page where you can donate with PayPal or through a credit card. It's really easy. It's fully secure. It's no problem. Or if you'd like to mail something in, do you mind grabbing a pencil and paper and let me give you the mailing address? It's AAJC, the American Alliance of Jews and Christians, P.O. Box 58. That's right, P.O. Box 58, Mercer Island, that's M-E-R-C-E-R, Mercer Island, W-A for Washington, and the zip code is 98040. I'll say that one more time if I could. If you want to mail a check to the AAJC, to the American Alliance of Jews and Christians, P.O. Box 58, Mercer Island, M-E-R-C-E-R, Mercer Island, Washington, 98040. And I'd be enormously appreciative. Thank you very much. And thank you for just allowing me to make that appeal in the midst of all the important work that we've had to cover during today's show. Which means we are at the end. And so until next week, I, Rabbi Daniel Lappin, your rabbi, wish you a week of good health and prosperity. God bless.
You're listening to Rabbi Daniel Lappin on demand on the Blaze Radio Network. Find more at theblaze.com/radio.